Remember last week? Jenny left. So Forrest decides to go on a little bit of a run. And at first it was just going to be a short run to the end of the driveway, then to the end of the city limits, then to the end of the state, then across the country, and back and forth he ran across the country. And did you really pay attention to how long he said he ran? 3 years, 2 months, 14 days, and 16 hours. God bless him, because I wouldn't even make it the 16 hours. Funny thing is as people watch this man run back and forth across the country, they assumed he had a purpose for his run. He didn't. He had no destination. The funnier thing is the people that assumed that he knew where he was going or that he had a purpose, they decided to follow him. They asked his advice and sought his wisdom. Isn't that funny? Then one day, to the dismay of all of his followers, he was tired of running. And he just stopped. And again, why? Just tired. Wasn't because he got where he wanted to be. It wasn't because everything was all good. It wasn't because he was standing at his home and, you know, he was tired. He had to still make the journey home afterwards. But what I really want you to focus on is probably something that got lost in the entire clip. As he turns and he begins to walk away and he walks into, down in between that crowd, one person spoke up, and what did he say? Now what do we do? I think that's a lot of us sometimes. We spend our lives chasing the wind, and well, when we figure out that we can't catch it, we say, now what are we supposed to do? We're getting to the end of this series. We have this week and next week, and well, right now, Solomon is still running because he still hasn't found the meaning of life. Now, I'll give this man an A for effort because he tried partying. He did. He partied like there was no tomorrow. He tried studying. He was a very learned man. He tried working. Okay. He tried to establish a legacy for himself, something that would go beyond where he is. But now, as we reach this point, Solomon is growing tired. Life is worn him down. There is no other way to put it. He's just flat out old. But you know what? He's come to a conclusion about all this running. It's meaningless. Now that's his word, not mine. All the things that he tried, all the things that he did, he said, you know what? They're meaningless because they're temporary. Someday, no matter how hard I try, life ends, and well, now what do I do? What's the point? But even though he's old and even though he's tired, Solomon still has one more race to run, one more chase to do. And this morning, oh boy, this is going to get kind of personal because this morning we're going to talk about chasing riches. And most of you know, I'm not a money preacher. I don't preach on money. I do believe in good stewardship, but good stewardship is not about money. Good stewardship is a heart issue. Not about money. Never about money. And the good news is this really isn't a money sermon. And so, rest assured, I'm not going to tell you money is evil. Not exactly. It would be easy to have just lumped this sermon in with the work sermon series and moved on with the work sermon because in our culture, it is very hard for me to divide money and work. Since I work for money and I need money to live, then it's just all this. Solomon saw this as two very distinct chases. Thus, I decided that it needed to be two very distinct sermons. Now, in case you forgot, Solomon is loaded. And that's the only way you can put it. He is the son of King David. So Solomon did indeed enhance the physical wealth that he received. So Solomon got money, and by the time he was done, he had more money. Okay? Good to go, Solomon, right? David firmly established Israel as a nation, but it was under Solomon that Israel began to prosper. I want to tell you something. Solomon wasn't the only one with money in Israel while Solomon was there. It is one of the most prosperous times in Israel's history. They are just rolling in the dough. Everybody's got stuff. It's also important to know that even though he prospered, he really didn't have to work for the sake of having money. For all practical purposes, Solomon is a spoiled little rich kid. Okay? He never really had to work a day in his life. He could have taken what King David gave him, and he could have sat there on his butt and did absolutely nothing. And he'd have still been fine. When he was done, he probably still would have had money to pass on. He didn't have to work, and he didn't have to get more money. He had enough. And I tell you all this because that makes it very interesting, his perspective on the topic of not just money. This goes much deeper than money. This is about stuff. This is what I have observed to be good, that is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their own toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them. For this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift from God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with the gladness of the heart. Wow. Now remember, this is Solomon's last chase, and well, it almost sounds like he's given up on finding purpose, right? I'm just going to do the best I can do with what God gave me. Well, we heard that earlier. You know what? Live life while you can, because eventually it's going to end. And maybe we should just put it in 1990s terminology. Don't worry. Be happy. See, you guys knew how to finish the logo. The little slogan there, don't worry, be happy. He has reached that point, but I want to step back and I want to see how he got to this point, because this is a bad place for Solomon to be. And it's interesting, if you go back to the beginning of chapter 5 and you start looking at how Solomon got where he was on money, it all started with this idea. You think, what, Barry, you've been reading too many articles. We're not supposed to be talking about social injustice. Why not? Solomon did. If you see poor or oppressed in a district, and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things. For one official is eyed by a higher one and over them, and then both of the others higher still. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields. Now, we're living in a time when you don't have to work very hard. You pick up a newspaper, and there's going to be something on that newspaper about social injustice, something that went wrong for somebody. And here's the thing. It's nothing new under the sun. Solomon looks at his own kingdom and his own wealth, and he looks out across his land that he's governor. He's like, oh my gosh, there are oppressed people. And he makes an interesting conclusion. If people seek power, and if power is connected to riches, then there will always be social injustice in the world. Wow. So this is at the end of his race, but now he's going back and he's looking, he's saying, if this is your race to run, if it is all about the stuff, then there will always be this concept of social injustice. I don't care what society it is, there will always be something, because we're running the wrong race. Solomon wants us to understand riches don't make you rich. So this morning, we're going to talk about a bit of money matters, okay? And well, It does indeed cause some social breakdown. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient for their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of good, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of God, good. I backed up here. Treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Paul warns Timothy here in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 2 through 4, that people are going to go run their race. And it's interesting, right after love themselves, where does Paul start? Lovers of money. And he tells us that, well, this causes us to create a society that, well, is not about right and wrong. Do you see those words? Look at the words that he's got there. Boastful, proud, without self-control, disobedient to their parents, not lovers of good, conceited, treacherous, rash, lovers of pleasure. In other words, I no longer care about right or wrong. I only care about what pleases me. And a society that is all about possessions and riches, well, he says, guess what? Eventually, you'll have no love one for another. Do you see those words? Tell me that you don't see this in society. Abusive, without any love, unforgiving, slanderous, and eventually brutal. And if we continue to run this race for riches, if it continues to be the chase after the almighty dollar or about possessions or about stuff, God says, you know what the next step is, right? We become a society that's not even reason for God. That nor God philosophy. Do you see where this all ends? It ends with us being ungrateful, which kind of sounds weird because it seems like the more I have, the more grateful I should be, right? Is that really the way it works? The more you have, the more ungrateful you are for what you have because you need more stuff. It says we become unholy, and we just don't really have anything else to do with God. You see, today Solomon wants us to understand this concept of what happens with our race for riches. So today he's going to give us some timeless truths that I suggest maybe you stuff away and start looking at your stuff. And where does it start? Money is not a satisfier. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. And you know what? I have a secular job, and every year, right about this time, we just finished doing this at work, they do those annual reviews, and at the end of the annual review, what am I supposed to get? A raise. And at the end, and when I get my raise, you know what? Never once have I looked and said, I'm all good. I got enough. I think my boss would probably pass out if anybody ever did that, but really, I'm all good. In fact, if I don't get a raise after the evaluation, what do I get? I get upset. And I begin to justify my attitude because the cost of living went up. Inflation, right? I have more responsibility. Hey, the company had a great year. Aren't they supposed to share with me? And you know what I'm really saying, right? I deserve more. See, a lot of people are going to run up to me and tell me that they don't have this problem. If you don't have this problem, then have a yard sale next week and sell it all. Isn't that what Jesus told the rich young ruler when he said, I've done everything I possibly can? He let me say, cool, one thing you lack. Put it all out there and sell it and then give the money away. You see, everybody struggles with possessions, money, in some way, some point. Because if money is the reason you go to work, then absolutely there will never be enough pay. Do you have enough to make your bills and have some left over? Why do you need more? Well, because I'm entitled to more, right? That's the race I'm running. That's what I want out of life. I want more. Because I'm never satisfied with what I've got. And then Solomon wants us to know that when you continue to run this race, the consumer eventually becomes consumed. As goods increase, so does those who consume them. And what benefits are they to owners except to feast their eyes on them? So the more I have, the more I want. Solomon is now switching gears to make sure that we don't get down the rabbit hole of money. Because this isn't about your paycheck. This isn't about your checking account. This is about your life. Okay? This is about how much stuff do you have in your life. And well, today, we indeed are consumer-consumed people. A large portion of our monthly budgets is used, think about this for a second, to store, insure, take care of, and add to my possessions. Am I right? You buy a house, you have to have insurance. You have to have upkeep. The bigger the house you have, the more insurance and more upkeep you have to have, right? We've been adding cars to our budget for the last few years because we have new drivers in our house, and every car that I add costs me about $200 a month, even with no car payment. Because I have taxes, and I have insurance, and I have wires and tires and antifreeze and all those accessories. Everything I add, every possession adds to my wealth, but it also adds to my debt, even if there's no payment. Wow. And then the crazy thing is, even though my stuff is all stuffed in my stuff, and I have no more room for stuff, I go around looking at other people's stuff, so I can buy their stuff and bring it home and put it in as part of my stuff. You think we're not consumed? I see people like, okay, ouch, that one hurt. Yeah. We are stuff driven. And here's the amazing thing. Do we own our stuff or does our stuff own us? Look at where Solomon gets to. You get to the point that, do you really own anything? Because when you die, you don't get to take it with you, right? You don't own anything. You're merely paying for the ability to rent it during your lifetime. I don't own anything because I don't have anything I can take with me other than God. That's an amazing conclusion that we get to. Okay, it's an amazing conclusion Solomon got to. I don't know that we've ever gotten there yet. You don't own anything. You merely possess it. And then we're tricked into thinking, I own it. It's mine. And then we just want to accumulate more and more and more. What a different mindset the world. We'd break the economic system if we changed our ways of doing this. It wouldn't work the way that we thought it would because nobody would need more stuff. Walmart would go out of business because they wouldn't have enough people to buy stuff. Only thing you'd have around the grocery stores, and they would be smaller because we wouldn't need to eat as much stuff. Wow, how our world would change. You think this race for riches isn't something that all of us deal with? Yeah. Really look around at your life and ask yourself, how much do I need that I think I own? Riches do not equal rest. The sleep of a laborer is sweet whether they eat little or much, but as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. Now, I don't know that I have a sleep problem over my money, but I have sleep problems just in general. Although I do make a regular habit of checking the balance in my checkbook, and the older I've gotten, the more I go out and take a look at that 401k balance a little more often to see, make sure it's going in the right direction. But Solomon makes a point that I just want you to understand. Everybody worries about money. The poor, they worry about having money, right? The middle class, maybe this is where you put yourself, well, we worry about maintaining money, right? I don't want to fall bound to being poor, even though I know I'll never be rich, right? We just want to hold steady. And the rich, they worry about losing money. So I don't care where you fall in the social structure, if money is important to you, and I want to tell you something, I like money. And I like possessions. I like my stuff. I like my lazy boy chair sitting in front of my 50-inch flat-screen television. I do. I enjoyed it immensely during the Super Bowl. Okay? I love my stuff. But you understand, we get to the point of our stuff becomes us. It's never ending. I love my youth minister used to tell us, with shekels come shackles. The more money I'm holding, the less hand I have to help. Man, ouch. Yeah. You get what the race looks like. How much of the stuff in your house, if you took it out and you put it out there and you put a sign that said free, come take, would you actually wake up the next morning and not even miss? If somebody robbed your storage unit, would you even notice what they took? That's kind of harsh, don't you think? Well, I'm glad Solomon wrote this and not me. Because Solomon then goes on to say, riches offer no security. Verses 13 and 14. I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners, or wealth lost through some misfortune. So when they have children, there is nothing for them to inherit. I'm not old enough to remember this, but in 1929, America experienced the greatest stock market crash ever. And one day, many of the wealthiest people became paupers. They owned absolutely nothing. It triggered an event in our nation's history called the Great Depression. And, well, many people were in such despair that they jumped right out of windows and took their own life and be without their possessions. I am old enough to remember this. In 2008, we experienced what is the bust in the housing market. It looked for a while like land was going to be the answer to the problems. You bought and you waited and you sat on it and it went up in value. And all of a sudden, boom, the bubble popped. People purchased homes with low interest or with low interest loans or pay interest only loans. And all of a sudden, it was all due. And you know what? A lot of people there lost everything they owned. Because guess what? That loud pop was because they had chased riches. They had chased stuff. And the reality, money is not secure, is not a security blanket for life. In this one, not the next. If my balance sheet is what I'm counting on for retirement, you understand that could change in a moment's time. Oh my gosh, this stock could go down, or that stock could go up, or the whole system could go kaboom, and you know what? A war could break out somewhere, and all of a sudden, that which I was counting on to rest easy in my retirement years is gone. In the blink of an eye. Of course, maybe I'll leave here today and won't make it home. Wow. Then all of that stuff that I had put there for my retirement, I guess somebody will get use out of it because I won't need it. And I'm not going to get to heaven and look at Jesus and say, hey, did you bring your checkbook with you? I want to check the balance. He's going to check the balance, all right. But it has absolutely positively nothing with how many things I have sitting on my shelf at home. Because guess what? There's no value in stuff. Much as I want to assign value to it, sentimental value, whatever you want, as much as I want value, there is no value because in the end, you can't take it with you. Verse 15. Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb. And Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. I am glad the funeral home does not do this. I would hate to think they stuffed me in my casket naked. Probably nobody would show up for viewing night, is going to be my guess. But, you know, they take nothing from their toil, and they can carry nothing in their hands. Oldest statement from a pulpit ever made about money is, you see no U-Hauls behind a hearse. It's funny, coffins are only made big enough to hold your body. You ever seen an oversized coffin where they put something behind it to put all your stuff in it? Wouldn't that be cool? We just had storage unit coffins, right? Put you in it and then put all your stuff around it and just bury the whole thing. Oh, no, because then it would all just rot in the ground. Regardless of how much land you own, you do get it, but the last piece of land you ever occupy is about the same size for all. And really, does it matter how good of a view it is? Do you look out much? Solomon comes to a realization. No matter how much I possess, in the end, I really don't own any of it. Because depending on how you decide you're going to leave this planet, maybe you're going to get buried, and so you're going to get a piece of land that's about, I don't know, maybe that, by about maybe that. That's what you end up with. And even you don't own that one, it owns you. If you get cremated, maybe they'll sprinkle your ashes over a bunch. Or maybe you end up in a little box sitting on the mantle. I don't know. A space about like this. Maybe you could give your body to medical science, but eventually that too, they'll, yeah, you get it, right? All the things that I own and I possess and I thought was mine, I'm going to eventually end up in this little, this physical stuff. I'm just going to end up very small. And somebody else really is going to own it. And they don't own it because eventually their life will end. And guess what? Then somebody else will own it. And so and so and so and so it goes. So I never really owned anything because it's not about ownership. It's about possession. Remember what they used to tell you when you were a little kid? Possession is 9/10 of the law, right? If I hold it, it's mine, and buddy, you better be willing to fight me to take it out. Yeah, you laugh, but here's the thing. I know a lot of adults, including the one that's standing here today. Man, what's mine is mine. If you come on my property to take it, I'm going to shoot first and ask questions later. Really? It's funny. Jesus told us if somebody asks us for a hat, we should give them the coat to go with it. Ouch. That's kind of a low shot, baby. Solomon wrote it, not me. This is from them, not me. Because I struggle with this, but I do understand the results. This too is grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. And what they do, and what do they gain? Since their toil is for the wind. And their days they eat in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger. Solomon is loaded. And what does he say he's got? He's got frustration, he's got affliction, and he's angry. Don't worry. Be happy. I got more stuff. Look at the treasures I have. Solomon says, it doesn't work that way. He's just irritated. The more stuff he had, the more stuff he got. He says, while I lived in the glimmer of gold, he ate in total darkness. I guess all of the stuff was blocking out the sun, huh? Maybe it's not the S-U-N it blocks out. Maybe it's the S-O-N it blocks out. That's a hard lesson for us, isn't it? Because everybody here likes their stuff. I know you do because you like your stuff. The run for riches. Now what do we do? Everybody else is running, so you know what? There must be something to it, right? They know where they're going. Maybe I should just follow along. I must keep up or I'm going to get left behind. If I can just make it to the top of the next hill, I should be there, right? I have enough stuff. Just need the one more item to complete my collection. Folks, they don't call it a rat race for nothing. Because it's going to be never ending. But you know what? I do want to leave you with some hope. Because there is no hearse behind a U-Haul. But Jesus absolutely tells us we're allowed to send it ahead. But not in the form of possessions. It's in the form of people. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moths and rust and vermins destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store it up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Over the past couple of months, I have had the untimely and difficult process of my mom passed away, my dad's moving in with my sister, and we got a house full of stuff. By the way, if you're into going to collecting somebody else's stuff for your stuff, we're going to be doing a giant indoor yard sale down in Lynchburg in about a month and a half. Come on and get some stuff, because I got plenty to get rid of, okay? All these things that were collected, my mom collected cows for her kitchen and gingerbread for her dining room, and houses for her living room, and lighthouses for her bedroom. And she collected all of these things. And now they're all spread out on tables. And we're going to sell every single one of them. She took none of them with her. This kind of made my little wheel start spinning. What's it going to be like on my day How many tables are they going to have to put out there? And then I got to thinking, what's it going to be like on the arrival of the other side? How many tables have been filled? How many people have I used my life and my wealth and my monetary ability for? How many have I used to promote the kingdom of God? What does my deposit look like there? That's the race, folks. Next week, we're going to end this series by Solomon finally figuring it all out and what is the meaning of life. Unfortunately, he's a very old man and a very depressed man by the time he does it. So I encourage you to come back and hear the end, but I also encourage you